scroll up to the just the camping. I know we have a.
And I hate to open up the can of worms.
It's actually past that section. Is it?
But I did.
Well, no, it's actually good you brought that up because I think that there could be some confusion, and I'd rather try to clear the air now to make sure that that we're describing things properly.
Where was the hip camp?
So that's on it's on page.
What is it under land use?
It's under education.
203. First one, so it's the camping, including glamping and hip camping, is not allowed in TPC, right now, and it's drafted. It's only allowed on AG2.
Huh. Well, that's happening too.
So the question,
they focus on timber owners as part of their business policy, or their business promotion is they solicit my clients.
So then that would be a larger discussion between commission, staff, on whether the allowance, whether the allowance of campgrounds, including glamping and hip camps, could be allowed with the use permit in TPC.
Mm-hmm. We'd probably have to look at, it's been a while since looking at the state law.
The state law.
Not even
there's
that
like a process for the compatibility
because to be TPZ, there's certain requirements.
It's not a compatible use.
Yeah. So
it's
I don't know if we would allow that.
So we would probably leave it with the dash.
Because TPZ is pretty restricted.
It is. Yeah, because that was another thing.
Timber.
It's like,
right.
It allows the hunting and the fishing,
right.
Which to me, it's like, okay.
You're just passing through.
Well, and you kind of like, you know, you have your hunting camp. Like, it's very common, and you're only overnighting so that you can get up at O-dark 30 and go hunt again. It's a lot different than if you're just camping out without that activity associated with it.
So access, there's a
lot of that. And then before we go on, back under agricultural and resource uses, we talked about this earlier, but adding growing and harvesting of timber to AG1 and AG2.
Yep.
As well as all the rural residential and commercials. Because, you know, if it's a dash, it's not permitted, but I can tell you, I write timber harvest plans and exemptions and emergencies on residential commercial lots because that is required. If it is a forested landscape, which is a very low bar, I have the legal right. They have the legal responsibility to get a permit to harvest if they are converting from a timbered use to a non-timbered use, or if they are harvesting a commercial product, regardless of zoning.
I almost feel though, Vice Chair, just if it's zone industrial or zone commercial, it's generally not going to have large forests on it. It would be my.
I would disagree.
Yeah.
I would disagree. Think of. Any of the commercial lots in downtown Mount Shasta, if they want to expand, College of the Siskiyous, I don't know what it's zoned, but we have had to do timberland conversion permits to remove zero trees. They are building on the footprint of a forested landscape. College of the Siskiyous had to do a timberland conversion permit when they expanded their science building, because they had to remove one tree in a lawn. It's stupid,
right.
But it's the law.
Yeah.
So I disagree. Like anything that has a commercial species, which is anything that has a Doug fir, a ponderosa pine, an incense cedar, a white fir, a red fir, technically is, and it only takes 15 cubic feet to be considered a forested landscape. That's like a tree.
I think the fault is staff's, because like you said, when we created this table, we took all the land uses that exist in Title 10, even if they weren't originally in AG1, AG2, or commercial, and we listed them out, and then we compared them to the different districts. So when you see growing and harvesting of timber in the original code, that's only in TPZ.
Even
though we compared it now across residential and stuff.
I just don't want the county to have any confusion that harvesting of timber is not allowed.
Right.
Because it is allowed, and it's allowed.
Well, the fear also is like if we say permitted, right, growing and harvesting of timber permitted, then they say, well, the county code permits it. I don't need a permit. Why do I need one from Cal Fire?
Okay. Then and now you're getting into one of my other concerns is because the county doesn't, and I've said this before, because the county may not say, hey, you need to go get that permit. They don't get that permit, and then they are in violation.
Yes.
So maybe, I don't know what the answer is there.
Mm-hmm. But if we put P, then they'll be like, we definitely don't need to get it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's permitted. Why would we even get a permit? Because you guys said
is there another where it's like the line means you can't do it? Is there some other, like, you can do it, you just don't need a permit from the county?
Create like a little emoji.
Yeah.
Those Cal Fire
emoji. A little chainsaw emoji. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't want people to think they can't harvest trees in somebody's backyard.
I think this day and age in Siskiyou County, you want to cut a tree in your property, you do it unless your neighbors are going to complain. That's just how people really live in Siskiyou County, right? Yeah. Unless you're doing a huge scale, you know, where your neighbor's like, hey, what happened to that whole field of trees? Then you might go to Cal Fire, but...
I think the concern over that is that would be adding another regulatory layer because there is no in-between, and I think that... I think we're trying to streamline and get away from that.
Okay.
And so I would...
Okay, good. I hear you. I just
plenty of examples that do it, but I don't think we're going that direction.
I just see the X and one to just make sure that everybody knows you can harvest. Okay, and then the other thing, going to the education public assembly is, you know, we'll circle back later about the camping thing, but I think actually it should still be aligned because it is not a compatible use of state law.
And I have a note just to keep aligning it.
So I think that is right. Instructional use, though, there is a lot of forestry education that happens out in the woods.
Okay.
And that is being brought, like, you know, Yreka High has a forestry program now.
Okay.
Kind of the same as, like, the ag side of things.
So expanding instructional use to TPZ?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would.
This is...
But I wouldn't...
This is instructional use non-school.
That's what I was thinking. Like, it's... I don't know what it fits. I just know we're doing field tours and educational opportunities. And maybe, again, it's something we don't... permit is just, you know, we don't need a permit for it.
Because it's not part of like an accredited program where you're going and getting a certificate or a degree or certification.
That's fully on that site.
Correct. It's just meant for educational awareness. It's not a full institution on the property.
Perfect. So you can go take a classroom full of kids, college kids, elementary kids, go lead them around the woods for the day.
We don't want them to have to get a permit for that.
Thank you.
People will laugh.
They do that like ag demonstrations all the time.
Perfect.
And it's not, and they're not a vocational school. They just have classes come for education purposes, but there's no school on site.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to stop them.
Do you guys? Do your ag tours, you don't need them? Good. Okay, just double checking.
Question on I get the traditional golf course. What's becoming more popular now is Frisbee Golf.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a major Frisbee golf course in Scott Valley.
Yeah.
Is that allowed by right?
Would that be a nonprofit recreational use?
No, they're making money.
So what you would
pay to go play the course.
Right.
It would be similar in some codes. We have like commercial recreation outdoor, commercial recreation indoor. So that would outdoor would cover like mini golf, pickleball, like stuff where you pay. And then indoor would be, it could be indoor go-karts, archery, whatever. So, that's a use you could use. It's common.
In what zoning?
It's on AG, little AG1 and the rest is AG2 and a little bit of TPZ.
Yeah, I would start to just question whether that's an AG1 use. Well, is that what you want going
in on? It's still being used for ag purposes and hunting, but they have a frisbee golf course with the buckets hanging from trees and whatnot, and people come from the coast to come play.
Do we want to permit it though? Or, I mean, like just let it happen, or we don't want a process where they have
that's
to come
why I was
in.
Asking in golf course. I'm fine.
Yeah, I was kind of letting it go.
Yeah, our intent is not to encourage those, is not to regulate those.
Okay.
And I think that really just comes down to, like, what are the site impacts? I think, for my experience, those courses are, it's a...
Yeah.
Very low intensity. They don't. They're not really. Yeah, there might be a path, but they're putting that whatever that stanchion is up, and then
that's it.
It's as opposed to clearing large swaths of areas, putting in sand.
I agree. I was just
talking.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But it's a great question. I mean, it's something that we could clarify, because certainly our intent is for it to not include that.
Then, question on place of assembly. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. In AG1 or AG2, no letters, no dash.
Place of assembly is it's an all-encompassing. Well, there should be something there.
We should have something.
I'll just note that. Place of assembly is all-encompassing. It could be community centers. It could be concert halls. It could be churches. Because you can't regulate a church separate from another place.
So we should have a.
We would typically dash. Dash.
Okay. Because I just noticed that there was nothing in those
right.
two cells.
So that's something that should be a dash.
Okay.
Want to go back to page 201?
I'm going to go back
under office construction or off-site construction, maintenance service, contract construction. There are several people who have their own agricultural haying operations, but they also do custom haying for other people. Mm-hmm. They're bringing their equipment back to their facilities, mm-hmm. servicing them, making maintenance, all very nice. But they're running a business. They do the use permit on that property.
So on their property, they're not just servicing their own equipment, they're having equipment brought into service?
No, they're using their own equipment.
Okay.
But they're going off onto other people's property to do custom haying.
I don't think they need a use permit for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is specific to like a contractor, like
a
licensed
contractor.
Oh, okay, but it's a part of the
ag
operation.
And their place is now becoming a contractor.
Yeah,
but
okay.
If they're
I don't see that as an issue. Like, it's,
but I would almost see it as the more urban environment. The pool service has his truck with all of his pool equipment and stuff on his property. He goes out to people's homes, services, and comes home. I would. I mean. Right, because he's taking his equipment, going over to someone's property, doing the work, and coming back.
Right.
And
yeah.
It's still an ag operation, so the fact that he would have that equipment on his property is...
Makes sense, yeah.
I'm not seeing there be an issue, unless I'm missing something.
It depends on scale, right?
Well, I mean, is there something that I'm missing or not understanding? I just want to...
If we wanted to take a look...
Or is it an issue?
I don't think we want to do this. If you had an individual... who solely did custom farming,
that's another deal.
And did not do farming of their own land, then I think, okay, we may need a permit. But as long as the individual is farming their own ground, growing their own commodities, and on the side doing custom farm work, i.e. fawaz, you shouldn't need a use permit.
How would, for that scenario, how would you regulate and track it if they're not farming their own land, but going off and farming someone else's?
Oh, easy.
Yeah, but how would you enforce that? How would that be enforced?
I mean, they'd have a business license to do it, which would be noted to the county. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it'd basically be a shop, mm-hmm. and so they'd end up having to get a use permit for their fuel storage, petroleum storage. I mean, start running down the checklist.
But their property's ag, correct?
They're not growing anything. It could be zoned AG2, but they themselves are not growing a commodity. All they are doing is operating equipment for other people, offering a service. Take your pool guy.
Mm-hmm,
your
mm-hmm.
pool guy has a business license. He's got to meet certain criteria on his property for his business.
Right. It almost seems like this is falling into that category, like a home occupation, or like I don't see it as, because the primary land use activity isn't taking place on his property. His activity is taking place on someone else's property. If he's bringing it home and working on his vehicles, then that almost flags to me that home occupation or home enterprise, which has its own set of standards, in which case those are already allowed through their own separate permit. I think when it's talking about off-site construction and maintenance yards, that's different than someone maintaining their own equipment for custom hay baling or for bringing it off-site to provide another service. This would be, in this case, we're thinking off-site construction or maintenance and service yard, this would be a piece of land, a parcel of land dedicated to construction, material storage, the maintenance of construction equipment as a separate standalone land use, not incidental or accessory to another land use.
You can imagine like the
accessory is the key word there. Mm-hmm.
Did you want to do a time check? We're at 4:23 now.
Okay.
We've discussed the agricultural timberland and open space. We don't need to finish up with that conversation quite yet, but just wanted to put us into perspective of where we're at. The other zones that we have yet to discuss are the residential zones, in which you have three of, I believe. Mm-hmm. Your industrial zone, your commercial zone, and then your overlays.
And I still have questions on AG1, the next set of tables, the dash twos.
Where are you at?
Well, actually, my next one is on page 206. It's for clarification on the distillery, brewery, or winery.
Why don't we, just as a suggestion, why don't we go for like another 15, 20 minutes to like 4:45? And then we can close out. And then finish like the ag questions, and then the rural residential and industrial commercial will just postpone.
I would say the cleanest cut would be to wrap up like this portion and then hold on the residential section. That's a whole
exactly.
Other
yeah. No, yeah, that's the residential, industrial, and commercial will punt.
Right. And I think walking through this process, it gives us an idea of time allocation that's devoted to those sections, because we're technically just about going line by line in some instances. And I think it's important
how we've
worked out. We've worked out a lot.
We try to be thorough.
Yes. And we've got a lot of great notes. Yeah. Well, this is perfect. This is like what we do this for.
Yeah.
Let's take some additional feedback.
What page are you on?
Okay. 206. This is just question for clarification by definition on page 206, talking about distillery, brewery, winery. I'm thinking more of the winery portion. I get, allowed AG1, AG2 is the field where the grapes are actually grown considered winery, or is winery defined by the structure
where they make
which
the wine.
The wine
it's
is
the processing,
made.
It's not the actual vineyard itself.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. That answered that, because I think some counties handle that. Napa, I think, may handle that a little differently.
Different counties handle it differently.
Okay.
We're not looking at the actual like crop, it's the harvesting of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then my next set of questions is on page 207. On the development standards. So my first, were all of these carried over from existing language?
That was the intent.
So there is currently a maximum height of 40 feet.
Oh, same.
I think
there shouldn't be for AG1, AG2, there shouldn't, well, that's the setbacks, let me confirm.
I'm looking at maximum height, because I know a lot of barns
let me look at the,
that are greater than 40 feet.
Let me look at this.
A lot of the older barns built in the 1800s are over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me see.
I don't know.
It's a big one.
I mean,
okay.
mo- most modern pole barns probably max out at about 38.
Yeah, so for...
But a lot of them now with doing 8-tier single-edge blocks, we're having to go to almost, the ridge line is at 42 to 44.
So in our current zoning, maximum height AG1, AG2 for an accessory building is 35 feet.
Right, but we have the ag exemption
on pole barns.
Yes.
And those pole barns, a lot of them in the last 10 years, people have had to go back and are cutting them and raising them and setting them back down so we can get the squeezes in.
Right.
And it's taking that ridge line over and above the 35 or the 40 feet.
Oh, sure.
So it's, the issue is the accessory structure, not primary structures on site.
A barn is accessory.
Yeah, so it's we could have some expanded height for county staff that starts to address that.
We could, yeah.
I'm just saying that realistically needs to be bumped to at least 50 for new construction.
Correct.
50 would cover it.
Okay.
Most of the barns, their ridge lines now, they're hitting the 42 to 46 foot. I don't know of any new ones that are over 50. A lot of our older barns, I've got one on my place, I think it's like 54 feet at the peak.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be grandfathered in.
Right, yeah.
Sometimes we have exceptions in accessory structure portions of codes, and I want to go back and look at this, that allow like pole barns, barns, silos to exceed the base height in the zone by 20-30%. It allows it. Let us go back and confirm that. If not, we can modify the table to cover it.
Okay.
On that table, before you move off it?
I'm not done with it.
Okay. I have just one quick question. On TPZ, is it 40 acres for the county? Because at the state level, it's a minimum of 160.
It's been 40 at the county.
Has it?
Minimum?
Yeah.
And see, in the Scott Valley land plan, AG1's 80.
Yeah.
Well.
And AG2 is greater. So.
Right.
So we don't have to use the state as the minimum?
We should be.
Because the state is 160.
It is 40. Your current section 10.6.5106.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I'm on the state. Are you on cdfta.ca.gov?
No, we're referencing the existing zoning provisions.
Oh, okay. I'm on state code.
So there's actually two sections in your existing code, 5106, 5108. One of them has to deal with production into parcels less than 160, and the other one has to deal with parcels less than 40.
Okay.
And anything less than 40 is prohibited.
So my question, though, is like, I understand our county code, but we don't have to be compliant with the state minimum?
It's all the counties can always be more restrictive.
We can be,
but not more expansive than state law as a general principle. And back in 1972, when they created this C, that's what the Board of Supervisors stated was 40 acres. And you know how when we do a TPZ,
because I would say that's more liberal, not
say
more restrictive.
The 40 is way more flexible.
40 is way more flexible.
And you know, from a TPZ, you're required to harvest. The reason that stuck out to me is 40 acres, barely financially feasible.
Yeah, we'll double check to make sure it comes out to state law.
I know it is 40 for the county.
It is right now, yeah.
Okay.
The board passed that.
You might want to check that with the state, though.
So I think this says, basically it's saying that the procedure for dividing a parcel, TPZ, less than 160 acres, which is governed by government code of the state, 5119.5, is in accordance if the county has a resolution regarding the division of the parcel.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's where the 40 comes in.
Okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So
I appreciate it.
That's 10.6.5108 if you're curious for that specific language in your existing.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. That's all I had. Go ahead.
All right. My next question is dealing with front setbacks. I believe front setbacks refer to that side of development closest to a public thoroughfare, correct? It's referred to as the front.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a is development a structure only, or does it also apply to fencing?
Structure.
Structure only. Okay, so we have a number of structures. I'm thinking along East Side Road. I'm thinking Cecilville Road, Sawyer's Bar Road, mm-hmm. that are well within,
yeah.
inside of the 50. There's, if we implement this, what happens when it comes time for those structures to be rebuilt, improved? Are they going to be held to this 50, or will the rehabilitation improvement, it's lost to fire, rebuilding? Do we do like we did downriver and have a finding, hey, it's not possible to do the 50, give you a variance, build it in its existing footprint?
Well, that would be your non-conforming. I mean, in the loss of a fire, it would, to me, to, if you wanted to build back to the non-conforming setback, would have to be like same footprint.
Yeah,
same.
That's okay. What we allowed.
If you're expanding the structure beyond, that's when it triggers and you wouldn't be able to expand in most non-conforming provisions, because new structures would have to meet that setback.
Yeah, and like our current non-conforming code, I think we allow for an expansion up to 25% or something like that. But yeah, and then there's emergency situations for fire and flood and stuff.
Okay, I'm good on that table then. Now
I have one more question on that table now that you've brought that up. So on the maximum parcel coverage for TPZ, it's 1 acre. Would that include, so say we had a portable sawmill or some other facility, does that include just the footprint of the buildings, or is that parking, log storage, like what is that 1 acre?
It would be developed land, so imagine like a footprint of a building, whatever the clearance of covered land by a structure.
So that might be tight with some of the permitted uses and use by permit. Just thinking out loud, like if it's a home site, I can see, you know, that's probably ample. If we are allowing any of the electrical production or sawmill type facilities, that's restrictive. So just something to consider.
You think you're going to cover more than 1 acre with actual buildings?
Well, if it's developed, to his point, you know, you've got to have a pad.
That's a structure.
But, well,
he said,
are you saying only structures?
Yeah, typically whatever would be covered by a structure, roof, foundation. Yeah.
Roof, foundation. Okay, yeah. So not like some graveled area.
No.
Where we're, okay, then we'll be fine. I was just thinking the entire build out.
I thought I heard people say that.
Okay, I was thinking, yeah, if it's just things under roof, we should be fine.
Okay.
But like, you know, I'm thinking by the time you, I think we're good.
And we're 10 minutes ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's get back to the agenda and close this thing out.
Decide when we're gonna.
Yes.
So for the residential zones, what we didn't get to.
That's where we'll start.
What does our agenda look like in 2 weeks?
James, do you know?
We only have one item, a little embarrassing to even have the meeting. I think it's like a double frontage project.
Okay, so
we'll do the rest of it on that day.
After the double frontage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What date is that?
That would be
the
17th.
Do you want to, would you guys be coming up or just remotely? Maybe we could set you up remotely. That would probably be easier for you guys.
I could tell you the 17th, we're doing another zoning meeting, complete opposite end of the state.
Okay, gotcha. We can handle it then.
We potentially have a staff member listening.
Council?
To clear up the record, ask if there's any public comment. Second, this is a special meeting. Number, Roman numeral 4 on the agenda. We normally, as a matter of county practice, do not go to number 4 on special meetings due to the board or the planning commission.
Okay.
So I would adjourn thereafter.
So,
after public comment.
So strike item 4.
Yes.
So the only other question I would have as far as the agenda item for the June 17th meeting is, do we have enough time to agendize it and get it out to the public to notify them of our agenda?
So we, since this is a workshop and there is nothing where we're adopting or approving anything, we did do a hearing today just as another level of communication to the public. However, we're not required to. We would not have time 2 weeks to post a hearing through the newspapers. But however, like for this meeting, we had our PIO post like, I don't know, 3 or 4. Facebook, our county Facebook, to let the public know, and we can work through other, like, you know, unconventional ways just so we can still have the meeting.
Okay.
But yeah, always when we've just done that as practice, even if it's a workshop, when we know there's not going to be any action taken, we just post a hearing notice just to cover our bases.
We don't have a 30-day notification for meetings.
Here's a solution that we did when, back when I was chair, we had a couple of these where we'd simply take a motion to continue at the next regularly scheduled planning meeting.
I was going to suggest
that. Okay, let's do that then. Yeah. So let me, so with that, we've had our presentation by the consultant.
Public comment.
We need the public comment. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak?
I think I'm all right. I appreciate everything that's happened here. Like, giving me the 400-page document, listening to all this. My only thing would be...
Do you want to come to the podium then, since you're speaking? Give your name and address, and then just put it in the record.
My name is Carl Harris. Address is 705 North Highway 3, Etna, California. I really, really appreciate having this open forum and a chance to come, and I really want to get some more of the community involved. Some of the points that have been brought up here are very important. I thank you, Jeff, for being a staunch part of the our agricultural community and bringing all these things up. Because I think that had a lot, some things passed and people had wanted to take advantage of XYZ and they had not been addressed here, it would have been a bit of a little bit of a problem.
Yeah.
I guess before the next meeting, if there's any changes in the documents that you guys have, that those kind of be disseminated somehow. I know you guys got them on Monday.
Yeah.
I got them yesterday. And I was like, that's 400 pages is a lot. But maybe shortly after you get them, perhaps if it's going to be open to the public again, that we also get a heads up that, hey, you can go to this website, download this, whatever, so that we can also be a little bit more informed when we come and maybe drag some more people with us.
Perfect. Great. Well, thank you for your comments. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks.
Thank you. So, any additional commission discussion?
Clarifying with our guests and Haley.
Yes.
They're going to take conversation we had today.
Yeah.
They're going to take conversation we have on the 17th. And then that's all going to get amended, edited, modified. We're going to then get that document back again in 2 months or 3 months for a final reading, round two.
And I think there'll be a public review draft posted after all of the comments are incorporated into a final, semi-final document.
Correct.
And then will there be a hearing for that, like posting of the public review draft, or I guess...
I guess that's my question. Are we going to have another meeting
after
here
this first version
for public to come in after we've made all these changes to have comments for us to give a thumbs up, thumbs down, make more changes before it goes to the supervisors?
I think we need to. So
the way the process will work is this will come back to the Planning Commission. You'll work through the remaining parts, providing county staff and our team feedback. We will incorporate all of that feedback into what's known as the public review draft. A public review draft will be clean, it won't be in track changes, and it'll go out for a determined amount of time, minimum 30 days, typically 45 to 60 is where we fall. During that time period, it'll get noticed out to the community. The community will have the opportunity during that time to weigh in, provide feedback. We collect all that feedback, and it comes back to the Planning Commission. So you can review all the public feedback, provide direction to county staff and the consultant team on what to incorporate into what's known as the hearing draft. At that point, that's when you have planning commission hearings, board hearings, and adoption.
Okay.
Now that spans over time, but there's CEQA involved in there too, so CEQA takes time. But that's kind of the trajectory of where we're heading. There will also be virtual workshops on the zoning and the general plan during that public review period. So there'll be Q&A sessions, drop-in sessions, and so forth.
Okay,
we'll take public feedback, give these questions, provide a much slimmed down presentation, but really have it be, ask us your questions.
So the public will have the same opportunity that the planning commission did.
Good. And then based on the amount of public comment, maybe we have it in a bigger venue, because hopefully there's a large public interest.
I was expecting at least 10.
The masses.
At least 10.
I know.
Yeah. There are two schools of thoughts. Either you did a good job on the draft and it's not controversial, or,
yeah.
or no one knew about it.
So with that, why don't we get a motion to continue this special meeting to the June 17th meeting to continue the discussion on the new zoning code.
I will move to continue agenda item 1, title 10, zoning code update, to be continued at our next regularly scheduled planning commission meeting on June 17th.
So we have a motion by Commissioner Fowl. We have a second by Commissioner Hart. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. So motion carries. Okay, so we are striking item 4, and we will go straight to adjournment. It is 4:43.
We made it. What was that?
I wasn't sure if it was a mission.